well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be checking in with Cody Wisniewski of the Firearms Policy Coalition Action Foundation here in just a minute. We've got some old cases to talk about. We've got a new case to talk about, which is always exciting. And then stick around after that for today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and a recidivist report. Well, maybe more of a plea deal that, for those of you who've been following the Dexter Taylor case, the Brooklyn man sentenced to 10 years in a maximum security prison in New York for making his own firearms. Yeah, we got another story out of the state of New York that is, I think, going to get your blood boiling a little bit. But right now, let's get started with our interview with Cody Wisniewski from the Firearms Policy Coalition. Take a look and a listen. Cody, it's good to see you again. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Good to see you, sir. Glad to be back.
And it's always good. We have a little bit of breaking news to talk about. And again, with Firearms Policy Coalition, you guys are always busy, right? There are always gun laws to be challenged. All right, but this time around, I mean, we've heard, you know, a lot of cases involving California, Hawaii, New York, Massachusetts. This time you're going to the Lone Star State to challenge a gun law. What can you tell us about this?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. I mean, while we certainly have a good caseload against all of the states that you mentioned, you know, we have our most cases against the state of California, I believe. That doesn't mean that everybody's immune, or anybody's immune, rather. So we have filed a challenge against some carry restrictions in the state of Texas. So Texas prohibits people from carrying in businesses that derive more than 51% of their proceeds from the sale of alcohol. It doesn't matter whether or not you're consuming alcohol. So even if you went into one of these places completely sober, you're still prohibited from carrying. And obviously, there's no historical tradition supporting that ban. There's no ban dating back to the founding era of anybody in or around an establishment that, you know, sells alcohol or primarily sells alcohol, banning people from carrying. And of course, it stops people who are making a decision to not consume. It stops even those people from being able to possess a firearm in order to protect themselves in public. Just, you know, this isn't anything unique from what Bruin has already held. It's just specifically dialing in some spaces in Texas. Texas also prohibits people from carrying at racetracks and at sporting events. So that would include, you know, it includes, you know, high school sporting events. So even if it's somewhere out in the community that's not otherwise protected or provided for security, you know, you could still be prohibited from carrying a firearm at those places. So, you know, it's not always common that we have lawsuits against somewhere like the state of Texas, but when there's an infringement, when there's something that is prohibiting people from being able to protect themselves, their loved ones and their families, you know, it doesn't really matter to us who is on the other side of the V. What's important is that the people are, you know, represented and that the people are able to exercise their rights as they see fit.
Absolutely. And I will say, I mean, I like a bourbon every now and then, but I am usually the designated driver when I'm going out to, you know, a place where alcohol is served. My wife might want to have a drink. Friends might want to have a drink. I'm the guy who always volunteers because I'm not much of a drinker. So to say that I can't protect myself, that I can't protect the people that I'm with simply because I'm going to a place that derives 51% of its profit from alcohol sales. That's I have a problem with that, both from a constitutional, but from a pragmatic standpoint as well. Right. So I'm glad to see that this is being challenged. Do we know the name of the case yet?
Yes, it is Ziefengus v. McCraw. So that's Ziefengus v. McCraw.
OK. All right. Ziefengus versus McCraw. Well, we'll be following that case very closely. But we also have some updates that I think our audience is going to be pretty excited about here regarding the Supreme Court, right? Where we hope all of these cases eventually end up and are heard. The challenge to Maryland's assault weapons ban, it started out as Bianchi versus Frosch. Now it is Snope versus Brown. We've had a new AG in Maryland. We also have a new plaintiff because the original plaintiff left the state of Maryland. And this case has been fully briefed. It's been fully decided by the appellate courts, right? The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals played some games with it. We had this unpublished opinion that sat around for more than a year that would have declared Maryland's ban unconstitutional. Before that got published, the Maryland Fourth Circuit decided, well, we're going to take this en banc. And then they came out with their en banc decision saying, no. These AR-15s, these other assault weapons, boy, they're like machine guns. They're like military style arms. They're not protected by the Second Amendment. So Maryland's law is fine. This case was appealed up to the Supreme Court. And then Anthony Brown, the attorney general, asked for 30 days to respond, right? Which the court gave him. And then he asked for 30 more days to respond, which is when FPC stepped in and said, well, if you do that, right, this is going to kick this case all the way to what, 2025, maybe a decision not until 2026.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, you know, if there's a reasonable extension in the case, generally speaking, you know, attorneys are going to go along with it. When you don't is when there's not a reasonable extension, right? So a first request for 30 days, certainly, you know, it slows things down, but it's also kind of standard practice in litigation. So it's not necessarily something that you would automatically oppose immediately. But then on the second extension, what was clear was the way that the Supreme Court decides to hear cases, right? Because, you know, for those who don't know, the Supreme Court decides what cases it hears and what it doesn't hear. It has to circulate petitions for certiorari, petitions for a writ of certiorari, basically a request that the court review the case, circulates them to the Supreme Court for a conference. And in order to hear a case, at least four of the nine justices have to agree to hear the case. As a matter of custom, they take a vote twice and make sure that they have the votes twice. And so when you start getting to this point in the year and you start looking at the calendar, of course, the Supreme Court ends its term in June. You start realizing that you're getting to a point where if the court doesn't decide to hear a case soon, it isn't going to hear it this term, which means it couldn't hear the case until at least, you know, late September, early October of 2025. And then it might not issue an opinion until the end of 2025 or early 2026. So, you know, when Maryland requested a second extension here, what was clear was that that second extension would push it back beyond the time when the Supreme Court could sit and actually hear the listen to this case at conference. Sorry, circulate this case at conference, a better way to say that, and decide whether or not to take it and still be able to hear it this term. So we pushed back and we said, look, if they want an extension, that's fine. But court, you shouldn't give them their full 30-day extension. You should limit the extension to a certain date, because if they file their response by that date, then you'll be able to hear this, you know, circulate this at conference, and you'll be able to hear it this term. And sure enough, the Supreme Court granted the extension, but granted it limited to the date that we requested. So it's a really good sign that shows that the Supreme Court, you know, wants to review this case at conference at least, and will, you know, make a decision most likely about whether or not it's going to hear it. If it did, you know, the court would be able to hear it this term. So it's kind of a, you know, I try to avoid reading the tea leaves of the court too much these days. And you never know which way the court's going to come out, which way the justices are going to decide. But what's unique about this case was, as you know, what we talked about before was the Supreme Court had a slate of cases before it and pushed them all down after Rahimi, and pushed a group of cases down saying, hey, these cases are all, you know, on an interlocutory basis, meaning they're in the preliminary phase of the case still. What we really want, according to Justice Thomas, is a case that's on the merits dealing with, you know, the ban on semi-automatic rifles. And Snope is a case that is on the merits dealing with the ban on semi-automatic rifles. So it presents the court with exactly, you know, what Justice Thomas flagged that they were looking for. And now, you know, presumably it'll be distributed to for conference this year, and we'll know if the court is going to take the case in here at this term.
Yeah. And as you say, I mean, this is the perfect vehicle, right? And so if the Supreme Court doesn't take Snope, well, you know what? I don't even want to have that conversation right now, Cody. Let's think positive. We'll have you back on once the court has had a chance to take a look at Snope. But there's another case, and this one, the underlying issue is also a ban on so-called assault weapons, right? But the question that was before the Supreme Court is not about the actual underlying challenge to Delaware's ban on semi-automatic firearms. It's about the standard for a preliminary injunction. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like this is another case where the courts are treating the Second Amendment as essentially a second class right.
Yeah, exactly. And this is actually, it's actually two cases. It's the Gray case and the Graham case. So it challenges both the assault weapons ban as well as the magazine ban in Delaware. And you're exactly right. So to get a preliminary injunction, which I think we've talked about before, but you know, for the benefit of anybody who doesn't know, is basically the court putting a pause on the enforcement of the law for the life of the case, right? Cases can take 3 to 5 years sometimes. You move for a preliminary injunction very early in the case, or if something changes. And basically what you're saying is, court, we're most likely going to win. Please pause enforcement of this law. Stop the state from enforcing its law so that we can preserve the status quo while we spend the 3 to 5 years, you know, litigating the full merits of the case, the full arguments. In Second Amendment cases, in certain places, they are fairly rare. If you follow the courts, you could probably guess the places that they're rare. But, you know, and in many things, right, this is where the Second Amendment gets treated differently and gun rights get treated differently. So basically, what the court below held was that the deprivation of a Second Amendment protected right is not an irreparable injury, which is one of the factors under a preliminary injunction. The case that held that the deprivation of constitutionally protected rights is irreparable was a First Amendment case. And basically what the court said is, well, the First Amendment's different. The Second Amendment isn't the same. So while we might hold that in First Amendment cases, we're not going to hold that as a matter of fact in Second Amendment cases. And we just think that that's blatantly wrong. I mean, it's clear. It's not as if, you know, the first isn't the first because they wanted it to be number one, right? The Second Amendment was the originally proposed Fourth Amendment. They weren't put in a particular order. It was a protection of rights that were understood to be so fundamental to liberty that they had to be explicitly protected in the Bill of Rights. And the Supreme Court has routinely said that the Second Amendment does not protect a second class right. It is not subservient to the others. And so the idea that, you know, the deprivation of speech can be fundamental, but the deprivation of your right to protect your own life is not, is asinine. And so this petition basically is asking the Supreme Court to take up this issue and confirm that the Second Amendment is the same as the first in this regard. And the development here, which is great, is when you file a petition for cert with the Supreme Court, the opposing party isn't required to respond. They can just not say anything. Sometimes the court will review the petition and will go, yeah, that's fine. We're going to deny it anyway. We don't need a response here. That's what Delaware elected to do. It didn't file a response. And just recently, the Supreme Court required Delaware to file a response. So it doesn't necessarily indicate that the court is going to take the case, but it does show that there are at least some people on the court that are interested enough in what the petition presents that they want to hear the other side, which is always a good sign going in. A required response is, you know, ups the likelihood that the Supreme Court will grant review in a case. And so we think that it's a really unique issue, and it's something that there is a split across courts across the country on. And so we think this is a really good sign going forward, and, you know, potentially another case that the Supreme Court could take up and rule on a Second Amendment issue.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. This clearly indicates that there's interest, at least from some portion of the justices, to find out what Delaware's response would be. I'm curious, is this a case, Cody, where we could see a decision not necessarily like Heller or Bruin, but more like the Catano case, the stun gun ban case out of Massachusetts, where we didn't really have oral arguments in that case? It was a petition that was brought up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court issued this unanimous opinion, basically saying, reminding the state of Massachusetts, hey, here's what we said in Heller about the arms that are protected by the Second Amendment. So there wasn't necessarily, you know, that was a pretty big decision, but it wasn't necessarily a whole big trial with oral arguments. Is this an issue that the Supreme Court could handle the same way?
It certainly could. I mean, it's hard to know with today's court, how you get a per curiam opinion like that without argument, without a specific opinion author, and, you know, what a vote would look like on the issue. The other, you know, thing that worked in Caetano's favor is that really what that per curiam opinion did is just say, hey, you know, we already established these three things. You did these three things wrong, state Supreme Court. Go do these three things right, as we've already said. The Supreme Court hasn't specifically said that, you know, the Second Amendment can, your deprivation of the Second Amendment protected rights can cause irreparable injury in this context.
Okay.
So it isn't necessarily a direct application. I mean, Heller's different, or sorry, Caetano's different, right? Because it was an application of like Heller mixed with McDonald two stun guns. And they're basically just saying, no, we already said that technological developments doesn't remove something from Second Amendment's protections. So try again. But you never know. I mean, in something like this, they could certainly come out and be like, yeah, that's not how this, you know, Supreme Court precedent in the First Amendment shouldn't foreclose this argument, or it, you know, doesn't automatically mean that this is not a irreparable injury. And so it's certainly possible, but I think it's probably one that would be more likely that the court would take on if it was going to take the issue on.
I mean, to me, that's defending the indefensible for the state of Delaware. But they, again, they've got the backing of the Third Circuit, right? This is the Third Circuit in Delaware. Yeah. So we will see. All right. Well, again, there's always stuff going on. If folks want to keep up with everything that the Firearms Policy Coalition has on its very busy schedule, what's the best way to do so, Cody?
Yeah. So you can follow, you know, you can see all of the casework at firearmspolicy.org. You know, you can follow along on social medias, social media for at gun policy for FPC on everything. And that'll kind of keep you up to date on what's going on in the FPC world.
Awesome. Well, listen, man, I really appreciate you carving out a few minutes to catch up with us today. Look forward to doing this again very, very soon.
Absolutely. Happy to.
All right. Cody Wisniewski, join us from the Firearms Policy Coalition Action Foundation, right? I got the name right?
FPC Action Foundation. Yes, sir.
Awesome. All right, Cody. We'll talk to you again very soon. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Cam.
My thanks to Cody for joining me on the program today. Looking forward to having him back again in the very near future. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. Maybe not quite a recidivist report, because I don't know if the defendant in this case had a previous criminal history, but I do know he got one heck of a deal. Here's the headline. Former Bill sentenced to 5 years probation on weapons charge. Former Buffalo Bills defensive end Alex Carrington getting 5 year probation in exchange for pleading guilty to a single count of attempted second degree criminal possession of a weapon. Now, he was originally charged in Niagara County, New York, with second degree criminal possession of a weapon, not attempted, driving while intoxicated, resisting arrest, operating a vehicle with a suspended registration, as well as several other vehicle and traffic law violations after a traffic stop on April 4th of 2022. According to the Lockport Union Sun and Journal, Carrington had steadfastly rejected the plea offer, but finally accepted it. Just before he was scheduled to stand trial on his original charges, he could have been sentenced to 3.5 to 5 years in state prison, but the judge agreed to a term of probation because Carrington had no previous criminal record. Okay. Again, you know who else doesn't have a previous criminal record? Dexter Taylor. The Brooklyn man sentenced to 10 years in maximum security prison in New York State for the violent crime of possessing, I think it was 12 or 13, unpermitted firearms. Now, Dexter Taylor can legally walk into a gun store and buy a gun. He can pass a background check. But because he built his own guns in New York, and, you know, New York doesn't like that, because they were unserialized, Dexter Taylor is now considered a violent felon by the state of New York. And unless his appeals are successful, Dexter Taylor will spend close to the next 10 years, and he's already started serving his sentence, behind bars. Again, in a maximum security facility. That's where Dexter Taylor is right now. I bring this up because Dexter Taylor is not accused of doing anything that could have put somebody at risk. He's not accused of selling those guns. He's not accused of using those guns to commit a crime. Carrington, he was originally, again, accused of illegally possessing a firearm, just like Dexter Taylor. He was also accused of driving drunk, which could have put other people at risk. Carrington gets a plea deal, probation. Dexter Taylor, according to his attorney, was apparently offered a plea deal as well, but the plea deal, I think, for Dexter Taylor would have amounted to 4 years behind bars. for the violent crime. And I put that in quotes because New York actually does consider a legal possession of a firearm to be a violent felony. So simply possessing a gun, even if you are legally eligible to own it, if you haven't gone through all of the steps that New York says you must take, that's considered a violent felony. I'm glad for Mr. Carrington that he has walked away from this with probation. But again, when you compare that sentence to the one that Dexter Taylor received in a Brooklyn courtroom, I just don't think justice has been done for Dexter Taylor. I think the state of New York wanted to make an example out of him. Maybe if he had been a celebrity, maybe if he had been a former pro football player, they would have gone easy on him. But Mr. Carrington caught a lucky break. Dexter Taylor, not so much. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from South Carolina, where a sheriff says, actually, I guess the local DA says that a homeowner who killed a burglary suspect will not face charges. The 15th Circuit Solicitor, Jimmy Richardson, said that charges will not be brought, quote, unless information changes. So, Horry County Police were called out to this home. It was back on October 21st in the community of Longs, South Carolina. Originally, it was a trespassing complaint. On the way to the scene, though, officers were told by dispatch that the victim and the suspect had struggled over a gun, leading to the suspect being shot. Police arrived and found 34-year-old Ryan Surujnauth bleeding and unconscious. He died the next day from multiple gunshot wounds. But again, the solicitor, which is the district attorney or the chief prosecutor in Horry County, says that the homeowner not facing charges, the other shots were fired in self-defense. We'll keep our eyes open for any additional details as they become available, if they become available, and report them to you as well. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a neighbor in Shorewood, Illinois, who came to the aid of a choking child and ended up saving that child's life. Here is a still image from that Ring doorbell cam. This is scary. Stephanie George and her son Sebastian ran across the street when Sebastian started choking. Her 7-year-old son has a rare genetic syndrome called Cornelia de Lange syndrome. And so he's being tube fed, but he started to choke on a piece of chicken that wasn't blended right. I guess it still had, you know, too much chicken substance to it. His mom says he was throwing up, started turning blue. She said her first thing was to call 911, but she was afraid they wouldn't get there in time. So she ran across the street and you know, yelled for her neighbor, Gary Hutchinson, to help. Hutchinson put Sebastian on his knee, patted the child on his back, and managed to get the chicken dislodged from Sebastian's throat. Hutchinson said, "I just jumped in to help." Stephanie George says Sebastian is now doing okay. He's back at home. Everything is fine. Thanks again to the quick thinking and fast action of Gary Hutchinson there in Shorewood, Illinois, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program today. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Don't forget, by the way, that Wednesdays, that's when we do our weekly VIP Gold Live Chat with Hot Air's Ed Morrissey. 1:30 Eastern is a great conversation. It is generally two-way centric, but we do talk about the news of the day. Would love for you to be a part of it. All you have to do, become a VIP Gold or maybe a VIP Platinum member. Just go to bearingarms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can take 60% off of your VIP Platinum membership. You'll get all of the benefits of a VIP Gold membership, but you'll also get other bennies, like free access to Town Hall TV, discount in the Town Hall merch store, and the ability to contact your favorite authors directly. Again, just use that promo code FIGHT and sign up to become a VIP Platinum member today. We'll see you tomorrow for the VIP Gold Chat. We'll also see you back here for Cam and Company as well. We'll be talking with Sarah Joy Albrecht of Hold My Guns on the next edition of Cam and Company. Look forward to that as well. See you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.